This podcast is brought to you by Kim Crawford Wines. Kim Crawford invites you to savor amazing with a chilled glass of New Zealand's finest, named in the Wine Spectator Top 100 list 4 times. Every sip of Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc is filled with tropical fruit flavors like passion fruit and citrus to help you experience golden hour how you see fit.
Visit KimCrawfordWines.com to learn more and find Kim Crawford Wine near you. Savor amazing. For those 21 and over, please savor responsibly. Constellation Imports, Rutherford, California.
Man, we gotta start using Apple Cash.
Okay, why?
It's so easy and convenient. Apple Cash lives in messages.
All right.
So I can pay you in the convos we're already having, not forget a payment, or have money sitting somewhere just collecting dust.
Oh, that is nice.
And then you can use that cash right away and buy stuff, like at a store, with Apple Pay.
I don't have to do all that bank transfer stuff?
Nope. It's just right there. Easy, convenient, and secure.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
See how easy that was? Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And as we were talking about the episodes for the show for the month of May, we realized many of the topics we are bringing are not the most comforting or easy topics, I guess, especially mine. I don't know why I keep going to the dark, but I'm traveling toward the dark side when it comes to episode themes, apparently. So we thought we would ease into the month with some lighthearted content, right?
Yeah.
And with the recent 25th year anniversary celebration of the classic 10 Things I Hate About You, I decided I needed to force Annie into watching the classic and have a moment to talk about the good, the bad, and the not so greatly aged, I guess, content of the 1999 retelling of The Taming of the Shrew. Again, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
Annie, what did you think about the movie?
I enjoyed it. I had fun. I watched it last night. Yes, this was my first time watching it. I thought it was really fun. I left feeling like, oh, in a good mood. Like, and it had a lot of stuff that I related to. As I've talked about this before, but in high school, I was definitely like the feminist, but I was afraid of the word feminist. So I would never call myself that. But I was definitely like this character where I was the one that was, well, why are we doing this and not this? So I related to a lot of it, and I enjoyed that. And as we were discussing, the music was a real throwback.
A lot of throwbacks. There's so many throwbacks in this thing. Yeah. The outfits, the classic outfits, the tight, like baby doll t-shirts, which I think they're all making comebacks or have made comebacks through and through. I loved this movie. This is when I was still in high school, so definitely my time frame. For sure. This was the introduction of Heath Ledger, which is why you had said that you did not watch this.
Yes. It's why I didn't watch A Knight's Tale.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I still have not seen.
Which I loved that one as well. Both of these, like, there was this whole era, and I was talking about this earlier, around like this time. This was right in the smack in the middle of taking classics and doing a retelling. So Clueless was one of those. She's All That was one of those. Bridget Jones' Diary, as we had already watched, that was one of those. Apparently, I got all caught up into all of these at a younger age as well. I was just surprised. One of the surprises that I got was that The Lion King was based on Hamlet. And I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. But I didn't think about it at that point. Like, it was one of those things like, oh, okay, very loosely.
Yes. You know, the funny thing, too, here is that's really throwing me for a loop. It's the 25th anniversary of Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. So when this was out, I was watching that.
Which would have been probably Cameron and Michael, who are the nerdier ones of this movie, would have watched that as well. But that was never referenced, obviously. Obviously.
Yes. It's just odd. I didn't know that they were in the same time frame. You know what I mean?
The things that you hit, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. interesting. 2000s mm-hmm. was a lot, a lot. 1990s to early 2000s was a lot. Yeah. So the movie is written by Karen McCullough and Kirsten Smith, who also wrote She's the Man, which I referenced before, which is another movie loosely based on a Shakespeare play as well. And also they also wrote Legally Blonde together. So they're you know, they're a dynamic duo. This was directed by Gil Junger, which takes place in a prominent high school in Seattle with a bunch of very rich, well-to-do kids. I don't think it ever really implies that they are, but the school alone was like a castle.
Yeah.
So I'm a assume they all got away with a lot. So I'm a assume that this is like private school, which is not necessarily stated.
Archery and stuff. Like that's fancy.
Right. So I'm like, I'm gonna go with that. So this is has a cast that makes up the list of 90s all-stars, essentially. The movie shows the inner workings of young people in the day in the life of high school growing up. So not my high school. Definitely not my high school, but
nope.
Kind of, I guess. So we have Julia Stiles as Kat, Larissa Olenek, which of The Secret World of Alex Mack. Did you ever watch that?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, okay. So this is a Nickelodeon show that was huge at one point, and she had a big following of people. This was her first, I want to say, first movie after her big fame. So people were really excited to see her in this role. So she plays the sister Bianca, who lives with their overprotective father, played by Larry Miller. And yeah, the father does a great job in pinning the girls against each other. That's the first thing I thought. I was like, wow, this is really bad parenting, but okay. Then we have Cameron, a new student who falls in love with Bianca, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is also pretty huge at this point. His new best friend, Michael, played by David Krumholtz. We have outside players such as Joey, quote, eat me, Donner, you're welcome, played by Andrew Keegan, who was getting big thanks to Seventh Heaven.
Oh.
I remember these are the things that I remember in high school that I was like, oh, these are big people. People were really excited to see them together. We also have Chastity, Bianca's best friend, played by the icon Gabrielle Union, who has been in several of these like 90s movies, like a 90s, early 2000s movie, and she still looks the same. And of course, the bad boy himself, Patrick Verona, played by Heath Ledger. Yes, this was my introduction to him, as I said before. And we're going to shout out to Allison Janney, playing the not-so-helpful erotica writing high school guidance counselor, who was great, perfect for that role, to be honest. So let's jump into the plot. Kat and Bianca are polar opposites, sisters, but Bianca is the cheery, popular girl that the boys all fall for, while Kat is an angry, anti-establishment type who is ready to leave her home to bigger and better things, i.e. Sarah Lawrence College. Their father is an overprotective type and has become more so after their mother left, which is a problem for Bianca, who is not allowed to date, even though there are so many invites from so many boys, including the most popular. After a brief argument, the father relents, saying she can date if her sister, Kat, who has sworn that she would never date any of the high schoolers or there, until she does. With that, we have Cameron and geeky friend Michael coming up with a plan to get Kat a date. And the only person they could find who could live up to that challenge is the scary dude who may or may not have been in jail, Patrick Verona. With the financial assistance of Joey, who is also trying to date Bianca, they get Patrick to woo Kat. So all these adventures happen. After some hard work and manipulation, Kat agrees to go to a party with Verona, which allows for Bianca to go out with Joey, who she was always intending to date. This was the intent to her. At the party, we have the drunken dancing performed by Julia Stiles, which apparently they were going to give her a choreographer, because the director was dating Paula Abdul at the time. This was a face. I was like, what? What? I love Paula Abdul. Love. Can't tell you how much, but oh my God. Anyway, going back to. But she refused and did this on her own. So props to Julia Stiles. Then we have Bianca realizing she doesn't actually like Joey, but likes Cameron. We have this awkward scene later of Kat being rejected by Verona for a kiss because she was too drunk and he was respecting that boundary. Yes, she got real drunk because she was annoyed by the party and what the establishment was doing. So, you know, all those things, which, you know, had this real sweet conversation between the two. Yay. But then also because Bianca decides she didn't want to hang out with Joey anymore, gets stranded, gets a ride from Cameron, and they have a sweet kiss as well. Da-da-da-da-da. Later, we have Patrick making it up to her with an impromptu performance of Can't Take My Eyes Off You in front of everyone with the band, of course, and being chased by security people, which leads to another date where they go and throw paint balloons at each other.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was an interesting scene. Then we soon find out that Kate had actually dated Joey. And he had pressured her into having sex, and then she didn't like it. And so she said she wasn't going to do it anymore. And then he dumped her, which is why she doesn't like him at all. Hello. But that all is good as they all decide to go to the prom, where Kat finds out that Verona was paid to take her out, even though he tried to gaslight her and be like, why do you think I have some motive? I don't have any motive. It's just because I like you. Lies.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Kat finds that out there. Bianca had gone out with Cameron and found out that she was a bet for Joey, which wasn't actually true. He said he was going to do it for fun, but whatever. And she punches him in the face. Fun scene. Twice. Mm-hmm. And then we have Kat being very sad, and they all have an assignment, which was to rewrite the sonnet, Shakespeare sonnet. She gets up and reads hers, and it has the infamous, I don't hate you, not even little, not even at all. Apparently it was shot in one take because she was so good at it. And then later we have Verona apologizing by giving her the guitar that she had been eyeing throughout the entire movie, and end scene. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Kim Crawford Wines. Life is busy. There are so many things on your to-do list with so little time to do them. And you're always thinking about others' needs before thinking of your own. Trust me, we understand. Kim Crawford does too. That's why they're inviting you to experience Golden Hour, your chance to reclaim your time and laugh with your favorite people, play your favorite song on repeat, gaze outside your window and daydream about your wildest dreams, or celebrate your victories.
No matter the moment, you can savor it all with a chilled glass of New Zealand's finest. As the number one ranked Sauvignon Blanc in the U.S., Kim Crawford has classic aromas of lifted citrus, tropical fruit, and crushed herbs to help you stay in a golden hour state of mind. Because Golden Hour is more than just time, it's whenever you want to savor amazing. Visit KimCrawfordWines.com to learn more. That's KimCrawfordWines.com to find Kim Crawford wine near you. Savor amazing.
For those 21 and over, please savor responsibly. Constellation Imports, Rutherford, California.
Was there a favorite scene for you in there?
There are a couple standouts. I really liked the montage, the sports montage, where she's like pissed at Verona. I really like that part.
Yeah, yeah.
That just felt very, like if I had been younger and I'd seen that, I would have been like, hell yeah. I did like the drunk dance. That was you had told me it was something like that was going to be in there, and I was not anticipating that.
Like, according to many excerpts, this is how she ended up getting the role for Save the Last Dance, because they saw her doing the table scene. They're like, oh, she can dance. She's a white girl that can dance. Let's use her.
Yes. Which apparently is another movie I need to watch.
Need is a strong word. Did I love it? I loved it. But it was along the same lines of me also loving Romeo Must Die.
Okay.
There's just like grittiness that really wasn't there. That really wasn't. Like, it wasn't that at that level. Anyway, but, you know, Aaliyah. Mm-hmm. I loved Romeo. Romeo Must Die might be one of my top, like, 20 movies for sure. Anyway,
nice.
For some reason, that was around the same time frame for me, those two movies.
Mm-hmm. Haven't seen that one either. The list gets longer and longer.
I don't think I have an excuse to bring that one to you either.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
I did like the passing. I liked the passing feminist comments she would make, because every time I watch an older movie, I'm kind of like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, they were talking about it then too, which I know is terrible. Of course they were. But sometimes, especially a rom-com teenage-ish movie. But I liked it. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It definitely had a little more oomph and depth than your typical teenage romance movies, where you see that it's okay to not be smiling all the time. And she was the perfect character. Like, apparently in an interview she recently did for the 25th anniversary and for her upcoming projects, Julia Stiles was talked about how she was told so many times that you need to have a better persona, you need to be cheerier, you need to be like smiley, you seem kind of like, you know, unapproachable. But this role was so perfect for her because that was what they needed. Like, they needed someone unapproachable and mm-hmm. who, even though she could be, she didn't have to be, you know, something else. She could just be there with the resting face, essentially, that mm-hmm. got her this role. But yeah, so talking about the movie, so I'm calling this the part, the themes and discussions, but more just a discussion about the movie, because I think there's so much more in that. Like, there's not a lot of just like, this is a point. It was definitely just one of those entertaining movies that had a good feel to turning a classic into something different and more approachable mm-hmm. in the late 90s, because definitely Taming of the Shrew, because you and I talked about the different renditions that were out there, and we were like, yeah, this is not it. Because essentially, the original version is like, he's really abusive, trying to get her to submit to him.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this too, because if you've never read it, I mean, she is the shrew, obviously.
Yeah.
And we still today get called that, like, women who are loud mm-hmm. or have like a, quote, shrill voice. Like, shrew is something that is lobbed against women a lot. And so it's basically him wearing her down and taming her because that's what's good for her. That's what's better for her.
Right. And for everybody in all of society, obviously.
Yeah.
But they took this and kind of flipped it on the head of like being a feminist and what that looks like and how you can bring in both levels. There is a little bit of an intersectionality hinted, as we have the African-American professor who was like, oh, I feel so bad for you, poor rich upper class white girl. Like, can you mm-hmm. tell me more of your woes? Like, mm-hmm. coming in. Like, we almost hit it, but we don't quite hit that. You do have, like, a very like all white cast except for the supporting two black characters, and you're like, cool, I guess. And of course, I'll go ahead and jump into the fact that yes, the very bad like African crew or the Rastafarian crew are all white people wishing they were black with bad dreads, and I was like, oh god, at least they didn't do blackface. I will give them that.
Ooh, the bar is low.
I know. But from that time frame, you never know.
It's true.
Even today, but even worse. But like, you're like, and like, there is a point of like, they are making fun of them at least. Like, they're not trying to encourage it and being like, this is obviously ridiculous. Like, this is, just go with it. Mm-hmm. Still pretty racist. I don't think it aged well. I get what they were going for, but there were those people that exist, so we know that. Like, they were there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so again, there was also the question, and I think it's a very good question, like how much they loved the character in several of the articles that I read of Kat, except for the one thing is like she is so dismissive and a little bit antagonistic towards Bianca, who is not like this. And the fact that, you know, there are different types of women, and that's okay if a woman really likes dating and wants to like wear the makeup and have a different type of fashion, all those things are okay too. And like, it kind of hinted at the fact that during this time frame and still today about this like pitting women against each other. And this was from one of the articles. Actually, this was from the article from the New York Times they had did with Julia Stiles. It says, in 2002, according to the self-appointed cultural anthropologist at Newsweek magazine, there were exactly three types of teenage girls in America. You could be an alpha, a blonde who loved cheerleading, worshipped Gwyneth and Vogue, and managed to be both itchy and nice. You could be a beta, which was basically an aspiring alpha. Betas reportedly took diet pills as after-school snacks, spent after prom at a motel, and were tragically brunette. Or you could be a part of the rising cohort of gamma girls, Buffy the Vampire Slayer watching flared jeans wearing freethinkers who were obsessed with Shakespeare, dated the class smart ass, and subscribe to Jane Magazine, the poster child for the gamma girl, Julia Stiles. And I guess you, Annie, as you said, if you were a teenager at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm obsessed with Shakespeare, but I was obsessed with, like, tragedies. So, yeah.
Oh, I did think that was an interesting article, and Julia Stiles' comment to that was like, I remember seeing this, and I remember really hating the fact that why are they trying to compare me to other girls? This is so silly.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between, because this feels very pitting against other girls. It also feels like in this case, you are rooting for Julia Stiles, I would say, in this movie.
Yeah.
So it feels like then all of the femininity that she rejects is bad or worse. But instead, I think in the movie, it's more she was hurt by this dude. She's kind of put these walls up. She has some, like, I would say, very accurate points, good thoughts. But in the end, they sort of come together and balance each other out, like her sister Bianca and her. And so I think in the movie, it's less of pitting them against each other, although the element is there. But this feels very like she was better,
right?
Than your classic girly girl,
right? I mean, definitely the moments between Bianca and Chastity was interesting, especially towards the end. Like, they were competing with each other for being the only sophomore at prom and having the date and all these things, which is a whole different level of questions. Which they did Chastity's character dirty, because why would she flip like that? Like, but it definitely did not hold to, like, being friends, which I wish they had a little more of, but that's okay. Instead, it was, like, henchmen, I guess, type of thing, like, lackeys for them, for everyone, apparently. But I think for that era, during that time, it definitely was a lot of that. We definitely saw the Christina Aguilera versus Britney Spears tropes. Yeah. Any of the young popular stars, they were all against each other. It was interesting that they continued to do that until oftentimes these stars would either quit or just spiral during this time. So we definitely saw a lot of that. And I feel like that was that era in itself. And yeah, they had the pinning of like blonde versus brunettes, which is still, I think we've talked about this as a full episode in itself. It's just like, why was this a thing? And I guess, why is this a thing? When hair color really can be changed so quickly and does change on its own so quickly, says I, with the amount of gray hairs that are coming. That's in fact, I think, like, I had jet black hair to, like, less jet. Like, it's still black, but it's still, like, you can tell it's less. So, like, it's such an odd thing, this conversation of, like, you're blonde or you're brunette or you're a redhead and you're all didn't like to be friends. You're like, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, we've talked about this in several episodes. It is strange to me how much we associate certain personality things with hair type,
right.
Hair color. It is very strange and it's enduring. Yeah. We still do it.
I mean, like, even the hair type, though, like being curly versus not curly, like it's short versus long. Like, if it's short, you're obviously this. If it's tied back all the time in a ponytail, then you're obviously this. Like, it's so many.
I mean, we talked about that in the episode we did with the Bob, where it caused like a national panic. Like, we still do that though. When a celebrity, a woman cuts her hair and it's short, it's like, what's happened to her?
Okay, the bangs.
Bangs.
Did you just go through a breakup? Don't do bangs. Don't do it, girl. Such an odd concept. But it was very, I feel like these are very reminiscent of those times. As we said, of course, earlier about the bad stereotypes, the fact that they had them, it was very Clueless as well. That was like that. Was your high school like that? Because you were several years younger than me. I was already probably out of college when you were in high school.
Like clicky, like bad.
Yeah. Oh. The stereotypes, like the jocks, they had cowboys, which we had FFA guys. They weren't cowboys, but they were FFA. Like, they were specific to a Future Homemakers Association and then FFA, which is Future Farmers of America, which is funny because my brother was a part of that. We are not a farming family. Never have been.
No, yeah.
He is becoming more. He does own goats. I found that out recently. Very cute. Anyway, but like, we had that instead of cowboys, and they definitely did hang out. The jocks, I guess there was a group of jocks that did hang out. But again, this
drama
was
kids.
My time frame. Yeah,
we
but
had
the drama
kids.
So we all split. There were so many different types of people. So, like, we had the head cheerleader being the lead actress in drama. Mm. We had the lead football quarterback as in drama. And then we had people who were outsiders, I guess, for quote unquote, all intents and purposes, who were also a part of drama. So our drama was rarely interesting, and it may have been because of our teacher, who was amazing. But, like, it wasn't, we didn't have drama kids. That was not a thing, because drama kids could be anything. That makes sense.
We had drama kids.
Oh, okay.
They I would say, like, we definitely had the sports and then the popular group.
Yeah.
And then kind of your heavy metal music, goth crew. I was in the, like, we're nice, you can sit here group.
Yeah.
But the drama kids would sometimes would mix, because we are also, a lot of us were in drama, but there was a specific group that was like,
Are you in the Thespian Society?
No.
I made it in the Thespian Society within the first year because I did so many hours as a stage manager. It was awful. Anyway, I love drama. Being a stage manager without any experience was real dumb, because I was the stage manager for a competition and she just put me in there like, you know what you're doing. I was like, no, I don't. Because I also gave the aura that I was organized, and I am not. We know this. I am not. So.
But hey, you got
it. But I got in. I'm in the part of the National Thespian Society. Anyway, but yeah, like, we definitely didn't have all of that. I think I was more of the, I'm just here. I'm not the cool kid, but I'm not the nerdy kid.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't in band, which bands, like, band geeks, I'm saying that as a title. I'm not calling you geeks if you're a part of the band. I was a part of the band.
I was in the marching band.
Yeah, band. But, like, they have their own crew of people. Like, they hung out with just themselves. I was like, they were, like, if drama kids were there, it was the band group. You know what I mean? And they were a force. Like, they would win homecoming king or queen because they were a force. I was like, Okay. So wow. I say that they were intense, true people. So you don't mess with them. You don't mess with them. we talk about the music. I think like the thing about this soundtrack that was a little different is that they had a lot of like indie women-led bands. And I really, really appreciate that. So The Cardigans, Letters to Cleo, Save Ferris, obviously Joan Jett and the Black Hearts, which was at the very beginning. We also laughed because they had Bare Naked Ladies yes. at the very beginning too. And it threw me into like so many like throwbacks to that. Quite hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I really appreciate that they brought those to front. They were popular in their own right. A lot of ska.
Of course.
A Save Ferris. I think it was ska.
Of course.
Music. Yes. And I was like, yep, that's about right.
Yes. That's and if you haven't right. seen the movie, you could probably tell from the plot breakdown, music is very important to Cats. And that's one of the things that they like, the dudes trying to help him scheme how to get her, to woo her. They like find out her favorite music and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty comical because she would be like, you like insert yeah. band here? Yeah. And he'd be like, oh, yeah.
Don't you?
Yes. And then he'd be all like, I can't believe you'd question my taste. Leave me alone.
Of course, there's also the really like sexist, like, oh, I would never listen to that music. That's chick music.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which came through a few times. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, you know, they also talk about Sylvia Plath, the feminine yes. mystique, but all these things that I found fairly funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, y'all can't dig deeper, but it's okay. Sylvia Plath had a hard life. Had a she hard, did. Hard life. A very short life.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire. This podcast is brought to you by Kim Crawford Wines. Life is busy. There are so many things on your to-do list with so little time to do them. And you're always thinking about others' needs before thinking of your own. Trust me, we understand. Kim Crawford does too. That's why they're inviting you to experience Golden Hour, your chance to reclaim your time and laugh with your favorite people, play your favorite song on repeat, gaze outside your window and daydream about your wildest dreams, or celebrate your victories.
No matter the moment, you can savor it all with a chilled glass of New Zealand's finest. As the number one ranked Sauvignon Blanc in the U.S., Kim Crawford has classic aromas of lifted citrus, tropical fruit, and crushed herbs to help you stay in a golden hour state of mind. Because golden hour is more than just time, it's whenever you want to savor amazing. Visit KimCrawfordWines.com to learn more. That's KimCrawfordWines.com to find Kim Crawford wine near you. Savor amazing.
For those 21 and over, please savor responsibly. Constellation Imports, Rutherford, California. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Yeah, and then, of course, if we did talk about anything, it'd be themes, it'd be the family, sisterhood, like the rival. Like, there was this level of discontent within the family after the mother left, and whether it caused him to be, whether the father to be overly protective and trying to keep them near him, mm-hmm. or the sisters to try to find their own selves, the Bianca finding her items and using them, whether it is sentimental or just because she thinks it's pretty, you kind of don't get that hint, but I think it's somewhat sentimental as the youngest daughter. And then you have the angry cat who wants to forget her and blame her for their troubles, partially blame her for her troubles, their troubles as well. You have that breakdown, but they do come together. It's not the sweet, sweet, like, oh, they're going to be best friends, but it's just like an understanding of one another.
Yes, exactly. Because I think that's how she convinced Kat to go to prom, was like Bianca convinced her to go to prom. It's like, you went, I want to go. This is like my time. I really want to do this. Don't you understand that? Like, can we please do that? And that's why Kat went. But she wasn't, there was no like, I'm so happy to go. But she was like, all right, I've heard you. I understand you. Yeah. I will go. Yeah.
Let's do this. He wants me to go. We'll have fun. End of story.
Yes.
And then somehow this dude who is a troublemaker ends up bringing her favorite band, Letters to Cleo, out. And like, I don't understand. But okay, cool. You do you. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a reference in Parks and Rec as well, because Ben loves, that is his favorite band.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really know who they were.
He has the t-shirt and he's in the back, like, laughing and, like, enjoying it. She winks at him. He's like, oh, my God, she winked at me. I love that it was so many years later. If there was a theme, of course, Shakespeare would be all into this, including the sonnet, which I love. Like, and it was, I think, in this era that we had where if you made it somewhat hip-hop, then you made it cool. Which has now become a trope and like everybody laughs at it. But this is during that era. And we have this sonnet, that now infamous sonnet that she writes about hating him and everything he does, but then she doesn't really hate him. And then we have Mandela, Kat's best friend, which we don't talk about. She was in Center Stage in the era too, with a ballet movie.
Nope.
Oh, the things I remember. Anyway. And her actual love for Shakespeare to the point that she says, I am involved. And she gets that invite to the prom with Michael as posing as Shakespeare.
Yes. Somehow I managed to forget that detail. Don't know how.
Don't know how. Here's some fun facts. I always love finding fun facts. Apparently, Gordon Levitt and Styles actually dated.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
And they went to Columbia together, essentially.
Oh.
Later on, turns out that Olenek, who was the sister Bianca, went to Sarah Lawrence. Yeah, later on. Well, I thought that was really fun. I was like, oh, that seems cute. Mm-hmm. There was a conversation about them doing a second one to this, but after Heath Ledger's death, I think that kind of like faded away. There was a conversation about him changing the movie completely and talking about mental health and mental illness and even suicide. So I don't know. This is the director talking about him wanting to do something, but I can't imagine it being...
Oof. Yeah, that would be incredibly difficult to pull off.
Yeah, and very dark. I don't know anyone who would actually be like, yeah, let's go watch this.
Mm-hmm.
They also talked about that this was going to be on Broadway. I think they're still talking about it. So I don't know.
Hmm.
It makes sense, kind of.
I mean, plenty of things we've talked about in here before.
Yeah.
When I read they have a Broadway version, I was like, really? But apparently it's good. So I believe it could happen.
Apparently it's good. Yeah. And overall, I think when we talk about these movies, we do talk about whether or not has it aged well. And I think the answer is better than some, but still, like, there's still some wordage and insults in here that I'm like, ouch, y'all didn't have to say that. But I guess that from that time, and I think probably when I was that age and that type of insults were okay and not looked down upon, we all use that. Those, not like, it's not really, it is extreme. Like, there's so many like ableist type of conversations, sexist types of conversation, real like slut shaming conversations in here that people were like, that's so funny. Wait, what?
Yeah.
That happened.
It's almost more like more of our attitude has changed around it. Like,
yeah.
So drastically that it feels very
It hurts.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we were laughing at that at the time or something like that.
You're like, oh, I can't believe that we were okay with this type of speech.
Yeah.
It is reminiscent of the time where when Dawson's Creek came out and everybody was in awe that teenagers were speaking so eloquently with, like, you know, four syllable words that no one knew the meaning of. So kind of like that same level of this. Apparently, they were originally looking at Katie Holmes and James Vanderbeek as being the leads for this as well. I can't imagine it.
Yeah, that would be a different... I think the vibe would have been different.
But you know what? Katie Holmes' character in Dawson's Creek is that of, like, anti-establishment as well.
Yeah, she's definitely the bookie brunette.
The bookie brunette.
I say this as someone who's never watched that either, but I thought.
I watched the first two seasons, and then I think I got in trouble. I
was watching it?
Yeah, that I shouldn't be watching it, because there were sex.
No. Oh, dear.
And that can't be happening in teenage shows.
I remember there was a conversation about, I believe it was Katie Holmes' character, Joey, like, snuck into a guy's through the window. And it was this huge, like, everybody was talking about it. And I, at the time, I was like a teenager, like, what?
Like, there was this level, like, but if you had a guy best friend and you grew up that close to them, it made sense.
Yeah, because I don't even know if it was sexual in nature.
It wasn't at first. Like, what started happening was that he started realizing, and she always had a crush on him, as it goes. But he started realizing, oh, she's actually a girl, and she's developing.
Mm.
Oh, look at those legs. I also remember Michelle Williams came in, and I can't remember why she ended up moving, but she was so, like, obviously sexualized from jump. That people were having a hard time. Like, parents were like, you shouldn't be watching this.
Wow.
Yeah.
That blonde hair.
that damn blonde hair. made her do it. Made her be this. But yeah, so I think this is, if you've never watched it before, understand, like, proceed with caution. This is a 1999 movie, and it shows.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because to me, when I watched it, I was like, wow, this is so much, like, less offensive than I thought it would be. But that's because I kind of grew up with that stuff.
Right.
But if you didn't.
Yeah.
And you go back, then I think it's very shocking.
Yeah. It kind of jarred me because I remember it with so much fondness.
Yes.
That I forgot. You know what I mean? Like, well, there was that.
Yep, that's why I've always recommended, I don't have kids, but before I would show anything to a kid that I have a lot of fond memories for, I would rewatch it first. Right.
I don't remember being too, this wasn't too sexual, at least, as in, like, showing anything, but they definitely talk about things.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this isn't unique to this movie at all. Clearly, it was based on Taming of the Shrew, but it is the whole, like, idea of paying a guy money to trick a girl into dating, and there's some kind of manipulation tactics.
So many manipulations.
Yeah.
And I think in the, like, cut scenes, they actually have a moment where the sister has a reckoning, because it obviously is Bianca's partial doing in trying to manipulate her sister. But, like, you don't actually ever see this in the show. It's just all on Heath Ledger, which is still bad. He did it. He definitely did all the bad things. But you're like, no one talking about the fact that Cameron was the one that was manipulating behind the scenes. Him and Michael? Nobody? Nobody?
Yeah.
He got off scot-free? Okay.
Yeah, because it was like, it's strange that it was their plan to, so Cameron could date Bianca,
right.
But Kat was the fallout. Like, they didn't even consider, she's just the shrew. We've got to fix up.
We've got to fix her. You know what's going to fix her? A man.
This troublesome man that might have gone to jail.
That may be losing, that may have lost the liver.
Yeah. We'll set her up with that guy.
Oh, classics. I'm so glad we got to watch it. I'm glad you liked it, Annie.
I did like it.
With its troublesome things, even so.
Oh, I had fun. I really liked it. So definitely, if anyone was looking for a reason to revisit or to watch for the first time. Again, go in with this disclaimer, but I recommend it. I thought it was fun. Yes, this will not be... I don't even know if we're going to call it a Feminist Movie Friday.
No.
It's not the only movie we're doing this month. Because, yes, we do have a lot of heavy topics. But, as always, if you have thoughts about this or any suggestions, movie or otherwise, you can email us at StephanieAndMomStuff@iHeartMedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at Stuff I Never Told You. We're also on YouTube, and we have a TeePublic store and a book you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This podcast is brought to you by Kim Crawford Wines. Kim Crawford invites you to savor amazing with a chilled glass of New Zealand's finest, named in the Wine Spectator Top 100 list 4 times. Every sip of Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc is filled with tropical fruit flavors like passion fruit and citrus to help you experience golden hour how you see fit.
Visit KimCrawfordWines.com to learn more and find Kim Crawford Wine near you. Savor amazing. For those 21 and over, please savor responsibly. Constellation Imports, Rutherford, California. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.